Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, welcome once again to Tennis Podcast Towers Melbourne, where you find myself, Matt, and David at 11:53 PM, and our first two semi-finals at this Australian Open have been set. It'll be Victoria Azarenka, the two-time former champion, against Elena Rybakina, and it'll be Karen Khachanov up against Stefanos Tsitsipas, who we have just watched pledge to build schools for children in the first world country of Australia.
Not a direction I expected the evening to go, but there we are. Good on you, Stefanos.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a nice thought. He's definitely seen a slogan somewhere that Victoria is the state of education. And he was saying some stuff to Jim Courier just now on the court after his win over Yuri Lehechka. It's been a day of straight sets victories.
Yeah.
Well, And a retirement. We didn't even quite get to four straight sets victories.
The very first retirement of the tournament. And if you're interested in that fact, more on it in the newsletter.
Oh, I'm looking forward to the newsletter now.
Because an extension of that stat is featured in today's newsletter. And Matt did a lot of pursuing of the story for this stat.
Yes, I really love it when something slightly weird happens during a day, because that's always inspiration for a stat. The hardest thing about the stat is thinking of the idea. But yesterday we had, or was it 2 days ago, almost triple bagels, and today we had retirement.
Matt almost lost his mind on that day.
I mean, bear in mind,
I've ever seen him.
If you consider, I think we've produced, in the last 12 months, around 100 or so newsletters. That's a lot of stats, because there's a stat in every one.
And the stat about this being the first retirement of the tournament is that's doing the rounds. People know that. People are tweeting it. But Matt's got more.
Yeah.
Layers.
Now we're talking.
Other reasons to subscribe to the newsletter include the possibility to win tickets to the Miami Open, Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours, and On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider, are our sponsors throughout the Australian Open, and they have given us a package for the Miami Open in March to give away to one lucky Tennis Podcast newsletter subscriber in the US or the UK. You'll get a three-night stay at the Miami Open for two people, two full day and night sessions of tickets at the tournament, premium hospitality, transportation to the venue, all included. So subscribe to the newsletter. The link to do that is in our show notes. Check out Matt's stat. Check out everything else. And then once you've done that, go to the URL to enter the competition. If you're a UK or US resident, the URL is toursfortennis.com/podcast. Tours, the number four, tennis.com/podcast. Who could they win breakfast with?
Oh, it's David's turn today to name insert obscure tennis player here.
Yeah, see, I think Yuri Lehechka looks like a breakfast kind of guy to me.
He's a Grand Slam quarterfinalist now, though. Not obscure enough, I would say.
But that's the point. it's that.
So it's Bortic van der Zandschulp, isn't it? See, did he reach the quarters at the US Open that one time?
I think he did, yeah.
And the point is, if you win, you might be having breakfast near Yuri Lehechka, who's now not third rate. He's a Grand Slam quarterfinal.
He is at the very least second rate, yeah. And he might be at breakfast.
No guarantees, folks.
We're very clear that we are not guaranteeing breakfast with Yuri Lehechka, but we also can't rule it out. So those are the facts. On occasion also bringing us to Indian Wells. We can't wait. Our accommodation is booked. Everyone keeps telling me how cold it is at home, so I'm very pleased to have the edge taken off returning to -5 by the fact that we'll be going to Indian Wells in March. So thank you very much to On Location for that. They're also offering a 5% discount code to all friends of the Tennis Podcast for Steve Fergal's international tennis tours throughout 2023. And just a little update for you, they've just launched their 2024 Australian Open packages have Steve Fergal's international tennis tours. And I think it's fair to say that we would highly recommend a trip to the Australian Open. It is great.
Just a bit, yeah.
Today hasn't quite been great. There have been interesting little storylines. We'll touch upon them. Tennis didn't catch fire today. Slightly odd weather day. It was one of those Melbourne four seasons in a day thing. We had the first night session match, which was, you know, the match of the day on paper between Jessica Pegula and Victoria Azarenka. That was played under the roof, despite the fact that it was actually a really gorgeous evening outside. And I understand that they were still fearful of there being more rain. It had been very on and off throughout the day. But I think that created a slightly odd vibe inside the Rod Laver Arena. I found the whole atmosphere of this match, which we watched the entirety of, Matt, inside the Rod Laver Arena. David, you were in the commentary booth with an even better view than us. I found the whole vibe a little bit strange. And maybe that's because Victoria Azarenka, who won the match, by the way, handily 6-4, 6-1. Maybe it's because she just made such a fast start. It kind of sucked the air out of the room and sucked the air out of Jessica Pegula.
Yeah, I think you might be right. I think I said to you when Azarenka was an early break up, oh, this is really good for the match. Because I felt like there was a danger because, you know, it wouldn't necessarily have been a bad thing, but there was a possibility that Jessica Pegula could have absolutely rolled through that match, given how well she's been playing, what she's been doing to kind of everyone that she's been facing. So I thought, right, okay, this is maybe good for the contest that Azarenka has made a fast start. And I think it probably was, to be fair, for that first set. That first set was really interesting. Azarenka, I thought, was playing tactically so smart, looping some shots, slicing some shots, trying to take Pegula's rhythm away a little bit. I think Pegula wants the ball in her strike zone, and Azarenka was doing sort of everything within her power to get it out of that. She was awesome, you know, so intense, so ready for the match, and brilliant. You know, the best I've seen Azarenka play in a long, long time, to be honest. But even when she went a set up, I still felt like Pegula had a real shot in this match, because she wasn't that far away, and she wasn't playing, I didn't think, particularly close to her best. And then there was a really long game in the second set. I think it was the fourth game. Azarenka came through it. And honestly, after that, there wasn't much resistance at all from Pegula. She was slumping her shoulders. She was sort of looking over to her box. We picked up that she was sort of mouthing, "What do I do? What do I do?" She was sort of bailing out of rallies quite a lot. And it was a very un-Jessica Pegula-like performance for that last four or five games, to be honest. I was really shocked by that. And, it was a shame, actually, because I didn't feel like it really did her justice, because she's been playing so well. She's been so appropriately thought of as a real contender at this tournament. And to go out like that was just a little bit disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, we will talk a lot about Victoria Azarenka because she's such an interesting and surprising story of this tournament. I mean, what a mysterious tennis player she is. And we all went to her press conference. That was fascinating. So we'll be going into depth on her. But just before we do, Jessica Pegula, I found this a really strange, slightly shocking day at the office for Jessica Pegula. Her defining trait is being reliable. And okay, Azarenka played well enough today that anybody could have lost to her. But the manner of that defeat, I found slightly alarming. I felt like her energy at the start was, how dare my opponent play this well? There was a lot of Yelena Ostapenko, like, sort of shrugging, like, what's this? This isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I prepared for. And then she rallied, no pun intended. She broke back when Azarenka was serving for the set. Poor game from Azarenka, it has to be said. But signs of possibility for Pegula. And then it kind of went again just as quickly. And then again, as Matt said, first three games of the second set, I thought, okay, this is on. This could be toe-to-toe here. At that point, I would have probably picked a third set. And then she just disappeared. There was total surrender from her in the last few games. Borderline unprofessional, I thought, in those last few games. And maybe there was something else going on. I don't know. But it was very un-Pegula-like, who is so professional, so tough, so reliable, so tenacious. I found it very strange. And there's a couple of things from her post-match press conference. She is not alarmed. She's very, very disappointed. But she was very like, look, I've reached a lot of Grand Slam quarterfinals. Now I've proven that this is no accident. I will keep getting myself into these positions. And one of these times, hopefully, it'll turn out to be more. And I'm glad she feels that way. I'm glad that she's not, you know, in a disaster zone about it. But on the other hand, I did just have sort of ringing in my ears your words about Victoria. No, not Victoria. I can't do anyone's first name at the moment.
I thought you were about to say Victoria Kuzmova.
I thought that too.
No one's that ever talking about Victoria Kuzmova.
Not at this stage of the tournament.
A really bad day for Jessica Pegula.
No, your words about Aryna Sabalenka and people having a moment of opportunity. And look, I don't think Jessica Pegula is going anywhere. I really don't. I think she will be a factor in Grand Slams to come. But I do just wonder if this, we might end up looking back as this having been her moment. I think this was an enormous opportunity for her. And I'm glad she isn't devastated at losing that. But objectively, I think it is a pretty devastating loss, actually.
Mm. Well, I feel it was a little bit Matteo Berrettini against Casper Ruud at the US Open. Mm. Finally, there's no Novak Djokovic and there's no Rafael Nadal. And it's right there. And laid an egg, didn't he? And I think that finally she didn't have Ash Barty and Iga Swiatek in her way. So this is why we're all so excited on her behalf. And also because of the level she'd been playing coming in. Because even with Swiatek there, she dominated her. She was devastating. She's been devastating all the way through the tournament. She even handled a close match against Krejcikova. So it was so out of character. It ends up being alarming for those that watch regularly, which are people like us. Her body language in the second set was terrible, I'm afraid. Terrible. And I don't like judging people's body language, particularly women, on a court. I don't like jump into conclusions and saying things necessarily just on observation, because I don't know what's going on either. But the difference, the contrast between her and Azarenka, of one player looking optimistic and solution oriented, and another player looking defeated and, you know, without any hope, was tough watch. And I think this, it's a shame, because I thought that was the best set of the tournament, the first set in the women's draw, and one of the best sets overall in the entire tournament. You forget that it was 66 minutes or something like that, and it was 5-2 and then it's 5-4 and it's toe-to-toe and it's brilliant rallies and Azarenka rolling back the years and Pegula trying to assert her recent form, which you're expecting to switch things. And she just couldn't do it. And then, yeah, I think she should be probably, I don't necessarily expect her to tell us this, but she should be more alarmed than that.
She she mentioned the conditions, didn't she, as being really slow, which I sort of felt like maybe the roof being on would help her, because obviously it was in indoor conditions that she beat Iga Świątek the other week. But I think she made the point that maybe there, those indoor conditions sped things up. And here, at night, it actually slowed things down. And Azarenka had played more at night than Pegula had and was maybe used to those conditions. She wasn't, you know, blaming that for the result, but she sort of pointed to it as a contributing factor. I asked her about whether the fact that it was a quarterfinal was sort of in her head, because she's never been beyond a quarterfinal before and this was such an opportunity, and she said it wasn't. She said it was just like every other match, and that made me think, well, maybe it should feel different. You know, maybe that's the point. Maybe you need to step up more in these big matches. I don't know. I mean, this was different because probably she was the favourite in one of these matches for the first time. But I don't know. I feel like the very best players do treat the biggest matches a little bit differently to the others. I mean, I know it's a tennis player cliche and it's a process, one match at a time, but top players raise their game, don't they, in the biggest moments. It's like they do have a different approach in those matches, and just something was missing from Pegula today. And you know, it's now, I think, 0-5 in quarterfinals and 0-10 in sets. So,
poor dear.
You know, that's
damaging.
It does feel like there's... I don't know whether it was baggage that caused today or whether baggage is now accumulated as a result of today, but that word is sort of in my mind for her.
Just on that, the cliche of focusing on the process and not the result, there was a great line, one of many, from Victoria Azarenka's press conference, where she said, I know that she was talking about process and how that's her new mindset now. You know, the whole press conference was about this new mindset, where it's come from. It was fascinating stuff. But that was one of the things she said, wasn't it? She said, I always used to talk about the process in the way that sports people do without really knowing what it meant. And now I talk about it and I actually mean it.
Yeah, and she says, people say, just what was it? She
don't
says,
have thoughts.
Don't be thinking about it.
Yeah.
And she says, I can't do that.
She said, she basically said that's utter nonsense, which I found very relatable. Yeah, what a fascinating Victoria Azarenka press conference. I mean, she swaggers in, she sits down in her Dior sunglasses, as she has done for every press conference this week. She's been wearing, in the on-court interview, she went and put on her PSG, her Paris Saint-Germain top, didn't she? Apparently that's something to do with, she's a mega Messi fan. Lionel Messi, and her son is really into PSG, so apparently it's something she's doing for her son. But it's very Victoria Azarenka in Australia, isn't it? Well, very Victoria Azarenka everywhere. These sort of props and bits and, you know, deflections, I suppose. But in she struts in her Dior sunglasses, and you're thinking...
Indoors.
How are we going to get anything here? How are you going to form any kind of connection to get a good answer? You know, I contacted, we talked about it yesterday with Blake Shelton and Holger Rune.
Blake.
Oh my God.
Yep, Blake.
I blame Simon Briggs for this. Simon Briggs, who in a moment of deep confusion texted us revealing that he'd spent his morning looking for Drip and Night Train in the Blake Shelton Spotify discography.
I saw Simon this morning and he wasn't a mess. Like, I don't understand how he was doing this.
Your tennis turned him into this.
Maybe. Oh,
anyway.
And what I love about the whole Catherine's whole Ben Blake thing is Catherine doesn't really know who Blake Shelton is. It's not a Taylor Swift, Taylor Fritz situation where Taylor Swift is front of mind all the time.
No, I know none of his material. I searched him yesterday. I don't think his stuff is necessarily for me.
Should we just stick to Blake?
Anyway, Blake. We digress. Eye contact, very, very important. Those Dior sunglasses do not allow for any eye contact. Have I said Dior enough for them to send me some sunglasses? Maybe. Feel free, Dior, if you're listening.
Four.
But somehow she does end up giving this sort of confessional. Doesn't she, in there? There was a lot of stuff to pick up on from her on-court interview where she talked about the fear and anxiety that she'd been playing with last year, how she went into the off-season and decided, I have to do something different. I have to be open-minded to doing things differently. And it sounds like approaching life differently. It sounds to me, she didn't explicitly say this, so I might be taking a bit of a leap, but I don't think so. It sounds to me like she's had a lot of therapy, and it's given her a new perspective on life. She had a lot of things to say, David.
Yeah, she did. I joined the press conference, I think maybe one or two questions in, because I was running from the commentary box, and she was already deeply into breaking down how her anxiety has affected her and how she is trying to deal with it, and the changes that she's made from the end of last year and throughout the year, where she was very clearly visibly struggling on the court to engage with matches and to feel herself out there, and it clearly manifests itself off the court as well, and it stretches into her whole life, and the two are inseparable, is what she said to us, and it was really, I found that very interesting to understand and to listen to, because she was so open about it. She wasn't hiding. She was telling us in detail what happens and what did happen and why it's different now, and the conscious effort she'd made in the off season to not necessarily be positive, to not necessarily be negative, but to try to be even, to try to stay in between, and to just end up where she is right now, in a good place on the tennis court. Where and I think she's in a wonderful place on the court right now. I don't think I've seen her play this well for years. It's just great to see her come out like that. And then, Catherine, you asked her about to detail her fears, and
she kept on referencing these fears that she'd been experiencing and that she'd finally found a way to conquer throughout this process she's been on the last few months. And she said fear of failure is the main one. She said there are others, but the main one is fear of failure.
Yeah. And in that answer, she referenced having experienced in her life panic attacks, which immediately triggered a memory for me from 10 years ago when she was playing, I think it was playing Sloane Stephens in the semi-final, and she left the court for some treatment, and then she was gone for quite some minutes at a point when I think she might have been behind. I can't exactly remember what was happening with the score. Maybe Stephens was coming back at her or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Think Azarenka had multiple match points, not
right.
taken them.
Yeah.
And then went off court for, I think it was about 10 minutes,
yeah.
And then came back and broke serve and won the match.
Right. And afterwards, she... And the reason I actually brought this up to her, I said, given what you've just described, are you able to more easily understand what happened to you 10 years ago? What I was getting at is her use of the word panic attack is what my suspicion was that's what she'd experienced during that moment. And And I must admit, at the time, I sympathised with her. I've experienced panic attacks, and they are incredibly debilitating. They knock you out. They almost make you pass out if you get a bad one. And I think that she was going through that at the time. That was my suspicion. And I sympathised. And so I was just curious to know whether 10 years on she could appreciate what had happened more now and understand it. And she said to me, well, what do you know what happened to me 10 years ago? And I said, no, I don't. Can you explain to me? And she launched into a story about how disgraceful the treatment of her was 10 years ago in the media. She was pointing the finger at us all collectively. She said it didn't matter how many times I tried to explain what was happening. People thought that I was faking, that I was cheating, that I was trying to gain an upper hand. That was the gist of what she said. And she sympathized with what Novak Djokovic had said the previous night about how he feels like he was always treated differently. She said, there always has to be a villain, and I was the villain. And she said, I think she said, you know, it's taken me 10 fucking years in order to get over that. And I finally have. And that was the word she used. It was quite a moment for a press conference, that was.
Yeah, it really was. Imagine if you'd been able to make eye contact with her while she was yeah. saying it. Yeah. I'd bowled into that press conference thinking, I'll ask her about her dog, seeing as she's brought her dog up. And I thought, a few minutes in, now's not the time. Another time, maybe. Yeah, it was really quite something. And something seems to be different. 10 years on from her last victory here, defending her title. 10 years since she's won a Grand Slam title. Those two Australian Open wins are the only major titles that she has to her name still. That, tonight, over Jessica Pegula, is her first top five win at a Slam since beating Maria Sharapova in the 2012 US Open semi-final. That's a stat I got from the WTA on Twitter.
Amazing stat.
So, look, something is different. I don't know if it'll be enough to carry her to the title. As I've said, she is utterly mysterious. Every success that she's had in the past at least 5 years has come completely out of nowhere when you're not thinking about her or expecting it at all. You know, she had a run at the end of last season in Guadalajara, you were remembering, Matt, and just the last time we'd seen her before that, she was barely looking like a professional tennis player against Emma Raducanu in Cincinnati. The run to the 2020 US Open final, a few weeks before that, we were watching her in Lexington against Venus Williams look just woeful, quite frankly, completely underpowered. We were all speculating about whether her game had just sort of gone out of date. Mm-hmm. Here, she's coming here on no form at all, seemingly. But a little bit like Andy Murray, she knew something we didn't. She knew something was different, even if her tennis wasn't.
She really used her experience today as well. I mean, I think the high ball she kept putting up to Pegula, then the slight, all the, you know, she wasn't just blasting away. She was using all that stuff. And I mean, the thing is, you were saying about 10 years ago, Catherine. I mean, she was a young woman then, wasn't she? And I think we expect so much of these young people. To have it all worked out, to know exactly what's what, and at 33 now, you're a different person, aren't you?
33 and a mum of two, in her own words, because she's a mum to Leo and to Guapo, a golden doodle, and Guapo means handsome in Spanish. These are things I learned today from Matt.
Hey.
So head to Victoria Azarenka's Instagram if you want some Guapo content. He is an absolute beaut. In the Australian Open semi-final, Victoria Azarenka will face Elena Rybakina, who beat Yelena Ostapenko 6-2, 6-4 in the first match of the day today. As much as we've just bigged up Victoria Azarenka, and rightly so, Rybakina is going to take some beating this tournament. Ostapenko, I don't think, played particularly badly today. She just couldn't make any inroads really on the Rybakina serve, and Ostapenko's own serve is vulnerable. Ostapenko needs to be able to break serve.
A bit like that Sabalenka-Bencic match in that way, isn't it? You know, one player's got a serve that is attackable and the other one didn't.
Mm.
Yeah, swap the two serves round and the result might have swapped round. It really did feel like that was the difference, because Rybakina could hold more easily and she could also take advantage of Ostapenko's pretty weak second serve, really. But some of the rallies in this were great, particularly, I think it was the fourth game of the second set. You know, everything was sort of ending on winners. I think Ostapenko had a break early but hadn't sort of consolidated it. And with her serve, it never really felt like she had a break until she had consolidated it. But Rybakina just sort of picked up where she left off, really, against Świątek, I thought. Broke in the first game again, just another sort of statement of intent. She's looking so good and so comfortable.
Is she the favourite?
So calm.
At this stage?
Yes.
Reigning Grand Slam champion in form?
Rybakina and Sabalenka look, yeah, at the moment, like the best two players.
But Rybakina, out of those two, Rybakina's been there and done it.
Yeah. And look, I wouldn't count out Vekic, given that 5-1 head-to-head for Sabalenka tomorrow. That could be a problem for her.
Mm.
And Pam. But
good luck, Pam.
But I mean, I don't know. I do think the achievement of already having been there and done it for Rybakina is big. Because I think she's 23, and yet she seems younger in so many ways, and greener, and yet now she's won that, and she's gone and had an off season, made herself even physically stronger. She just looks like a woman who knows where she's going with it, with everything now. So I do think she's the favourite. Yeah, even though I think Azarenka was amazing today, and I really think Azarenka might find a way, but Rybakina, I would probably say, is the favourite.
Mm. Yeah, Azarenka's got been there and done it experience as well, hasn't she? I just think Rybakina and Sabalenka feel like they could just hit anyone off the court, including Azarenka. But if Azarenka turns it into a bit of a battle or gets her teeth into the match,
and maybe uses some of those flights of the ball that she used today.
Absolutely. She really did show tactical flexibility today, I thought, which was great. Yeah, not going to be easy for Rybakina, but she just looks so good. And I don't think we can underestimate how hard it is to back up a big win like Świątek, you know. Like, and I never really had any doubt that she would. She just fills me with confidence. But a lot of players really struggle in that second match after a big win. But I think that's because for her, it felt like she belonged. It felt like, you know, just a step on her path to the title. It wasn't a huge moment that she'd beaten the world number one. It was just something she had to do on her path. And that's the confidence that she's playing with and that she gives you, I think.
She's playing for the title. She's playing for the backhand list. There's a lot at stake for Elena Rybakina.
And also, I should say, a lot of people messaged me about Azarenka on the backhand list.
She's kind of an OG, isn't she?
Exactly. I saw, when I made the list, in my mind, it was kind of a bit like Halep. Like, if I was doing an all-time women's backhand list, I totally think they would be on it. But in the moment, they didn't feel that.
Do an all-time one.
Relevant?
Was Anna Bogdan relevant when you were doing the list?
Touché.
I want an all-time list.
I mean, Azarenka's backhand is awesome.
Mm.
Maybe the list isn't
long
enough.
Look at him. He's glazing over. He's they're all going through his head.
Matt needs a moment. There is talk of a men's backhand list. TBC, but there is strong incentive and encouragement for that to happen.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Let's talk about the men's matches from today. Should we do Tsitsipas? Because we've already touched upon the big headline, which is that he's going to build schools for Australian children.
Yep.
He's also going to play in another Australian Open semi-final. He beat Yuri Lehechka tonight, three straight sets. It looked, for quite a lot of that third set, like it had the feel of a match where he would still get over the line. You'd never really worry that he would lose, but he might get himself embroiled in an annoying fourth set. That's what it had the feel of to me. And I think it was very impressive from him that didn't happen. He's got an extraordinary break point saved record going on this tournament, and that played out again tonight. So solid, so secure on break points on his own serve. The serve is looking really solid.
I was more worried than you, for on his account in that third set, because I think he did incredibly well in the first two sets to deal with a real and present danger of an opponent who's bloody good. Lehechka is dangerous and compact and yet powerful. He's got a pretty formidable combination there, but it was the body language of Tsitsipas and the way he slashed that ball away in anger when he was at 3-4 on the Hechka's serve and didn't break, and he nearly hit a ball kid. Now, obviously, with a little bit of bad luck there, he's not only injuring a ball kid, but he's also defaulted from the tournament. Okay, that didn't happen, but you could see steam coming out of his ears. He was just so nervous and so anxious and so angry that the match wasn't already over yet. I really thought that we could be looking at a Borna Čoric situation there if he'd have lost that set.
That's, it's the worst kind of situation if you're Stefanos Tsitsipas.
US Open 2020, multiple match points, because we've seen it with him. He can lose his mind. And maybe this is an example of progress, that he actually held it together just long enough to win the match in straight sets. And he played well, he deserved it. And I mean, look, we tease him, but he means well and all the rest of it. But that was, I think he was really, really on the edge there. And he got away with it. He needs to calm down.
Forehand's looking good, isn't it?
It is. And he's stepping up in the big moments, as you said, in that second set tiebreak. I thought he just accelerated away, showed his class. And he is playing really well on those break points. I suppose it would be a bit of a worry to me that he's conceding so many breakpoints. It's a slightly obscure statistic because so many of them were against Jannik Sinner.
29?
I think it was 26.
Right.
And he got broken four times, but he saved a hell of a lot. Mm. He saved 8 out of 8 today, but you know he's got a semi-final first. But I'm just thinking of Novak Djokovic, you know, and I don't think he would allow Tsitsipas to get away with that many chances. I think he needs to be sort of closing even more convincingly. But he's playing really, really well, and there has been a different feel about him this tournament. He always plays well at the Australian Open, doesn't he? As you said, I think this is his fourth semi-final in the last 5 years. Like, he's really consistent here.
Called it his home Grand Slam,
he did.
Which was a nice...
He keeps saying that.
No, yeah. It's a nice...
He's trying to make it happen.
That goes down well with the locals. Yeah. They like that.
I mean, there are always... I do remember once watching Tsitsipas. I think he was on court 3. I think it would have been in 2019. Huge Greek support for him, and then they all marched over, I think, to the John Cain Arena for Sakkari. Yeah. And there was a lovely scene. I always remember it.
It is actually a really nice energy out there with the Greek fans. Yeah. And they bring joy, I think, when they come to Melbourne Park, don't they?
And I do think Tsitsipas gets a lift from that and plays better here, and the conditions suit him, and I think he's... You know, I think he's feeling strong after the sort of off season. He's in a very good place.
I watched the little bit he did with the Australian comedian Andy Lee. That is his name, isn't it? Andy Lee. I'm doubting everything now. He used to do these Guess Who segments with the players that would run over the course of the tournament during Channel 9's coverage. And this year they're doing something different, which is we asked 100 Australians whether they've ever done this thing, and the player has to guess what percentage of Australians have done this thing. Matt and I watched one with the duo of Holger Rune and Felix Auger-Aliassime earlier, and they were asked to guess what percentage of Australians have done a poo outside as adults.
And it was shockingly high.
67%, David. That is the headline of the day.
What, in a toilet outside?
No. Out in the open.
Out in the open.
I'll let that sink in for you for a moment. What I meant to tell you was...
Where are they going to do that?
What a country.
What I meant to tell you was that I saw Stefanos Tsitsipas's sometime in the blur that is time of the last few days. And before they started with the questions, they did a joke about the Greek community and all of that. And they handed him a plate to smash. And in the most Stefanos Tsitsipas turn of events ever, he threw the plate down and it failed to smash. So for the whole bit, there's just this intact plate sitting on the floor, laughing at him. Anyway, in the semi-final, he will face Karen Khachanov, who is a confirmed Grand Slam specialist. That's back-to-back major semi-finals now, having achieved that feat at the US Open. I almost said Peter Korda then. What is happening to me? I'm just going to do surnames from now on. Only surnames. Sebastian Korda, Seb Korda, Sebi Korda. Bit of a diminished threat today, it has to be said. Had a wrist injury, got treatment on it in the second set. He said it's something he felt early in the season. He felt it when he was playing in Adelaide a little bit. But he hadn't been feeling it this tournament until today. He started feeling it in the second set. And it was a factor. It was an increasing factor as the match went on. It resulted in him having to retire midway through the third set. I think he might have struggled with Khachanov today either way. Quite frankly, I always underestimate Karen Khachanov. I don't remember even sort of hovering over him when I did my predictions. Quite frankly, I put Francis Tiafoe into that fourth round matchup, I think, with Rafael Nadal without too much hesitation, to be honest. And yet, he's really good at Grand Slams and really good on a hard court, his rally tolerance is incredible. I'm too guilty of thinking he's big and agricultural, he's just going to bash the ball around. But actually, he's content to rally and be patient and wait for the moment to give the ball a whack, in the words of Ash Barty. And he's really solid in the back of the court.
How good's his backhand down the line, Matt? There were a couple of times when Seb Korda was running around his backhand to the inside out and just opening up that gap. And Khachanov didn't need a second to pull the trigger.
Mm. It's quite a stiff-looking shot.
Yeah.
And yet it's...
He makes it work. If he's really on form, makes it if he's work. In form, yeah. You know, he's obviously worked so hard, hasn't he?
Stiff doesn't get you on the backhand list, I'm
he's
afraid,
he's a stiff-looking guy, isn't he? He's not loose and fluid. And maybe that's why we overlook him, because it's not, you know, it's not all feet off the ground, inside-out, single-handed backhands, is it? Mm. But...
Do you know, what he's actually doing is he's showing he's got fangs, which we've always said he hasn't got.
He did look quite fangy today, because
he isn't that good. Right? He's good.
That is going to get clipped up.
Yeah.
But, you know...
That's a Rafael...
David Law out of context.
You need to do an Nadal-type clarification. I didn't say that.
But these guys, who we all think are more talented and are going to beat him... He plays big boy tennis against them, and he just he refuses to have it. He just says, no, I'm coming after you, and I will be carried off this court if I have to be. And you're going to get it. And he's going to pull the trigger. He's going to go for everything, and he won't be left wondering what would have happened. Mm. And he's maximizing as a result. I think that those are fangs.
Interesting. Mm. The word that comes to mind for me always with Khachanov is robust. And I think
it's
that's
not a sexy word, that is it?
I've makes called me him think stiff of that, and robust.
It makes me think of that episode of Veep, robust. Anyone know that reference?
Karen Khachanov,
I don't.
Grand Slam semi-finalist, robust, not sexy.
Not very good.
Not that good. But stiff.
But
sorry, Karen.
Fangy.
But congratulations.
Fangy. She's the ultimate.
Despite all that, you're in the semi-final.
And it does make sense to me that he's good over five sets because of his robustness. Like, he's a tough out, I think people would say. And he's also...
Americans would say.
Yeah. And he's also, you know, powerful enough that he can also impose himself when he needs to. And I mean, the word he used was that he's reinvented himself in these slams, you know, because
that's a good line.
Because he was the guy who was reliably third round, fourth round, couple of quarterfinals in there. But I think that's maybe why we don't trust him to go far, because for so long he hasn't been this guy. It's only very recently, semi-final in New York, semi-final here, where he has emerged as a real specialist, I suppose, in these events. And he thinks he's got a much better shot this time in the semi-final. This was before he knew his opponent, but he wasn't talking about the opponent specifically. And the reason he thinks that is because in New York, he just had a long line of difficult, grueling matches. And by the time he got to the semi-final, he was a bit spent. And that included a very late match against Kyrgios that finished at about 2 a.m. He said he didn't get to bed until 5. When you miss a whole night's sleep, he said, you know, very much the theme of this tournament, you miss a whole night's sleep, you're sort of just ruined and you've got no chance the next time. He's had a good draw here. He's come through relatively comfortably. He feels in good shape after the off-season. So he's sort of talking up his chances. He really is. And then just the sort of one other line that... Well, there are a few other things that came out of his press conference, which I'm sure we're going to get on to. But one of them was Matt Futterman asked him about the fact that, you know, he's sort of... He was the guy amongst that generation of Russians. You know, Andrei Rublev, Daniil Medvedev always say that he was better as the junior.
Matt Futterman revealing himself as a tennis podcast listener circa 2018 there.
He was there for Matt Roberts Day.
but I think even when they were sort of coming up together in the juniors, you know, he was the one that was more talked about. And for me, that sticks out because I remember being at the Davis Cup in 2021 and Hachnov was there as the fourth Russian. You know, he was the spare part because, I mean, Aslan Karatsev was ahead of him. And I remember then I interviewed him and he just seemed completely unbothered. And I thought, oh, well, that sort of tells me everything that I sort of feel like I know about Karen Hachinov. You know, he's quite comfortable being where he is. And I thought he should be really battling with Medvedev and Rublev and certainly Karatsev to be one of the, you know, one of his country's top players.
Where are you now, Aslan?
I mean, genuinely, when was the last time I ever said the word Aslan Karatsev? It's a long time.
And he said that, you know, there has been a little bit of a shift in the last few years and in the last year or so. And he cited, you know, OK, they're not compatriots, but he said, you know, the big three have all sort of spurred each other on. And he said he has been a bit spurred on by the other two in the last year or so. So that, I think, has been a sort of reinvention of him as well. And, you know, there's just a bit more hunger, I think, about him. He was very content, I think, where he was for a while, and he suddenly decided that no, actually, I'm better than that.
I do see some Wawrinka comparisons. Mm. You know, the slam specialist thing, the
late bloomer,
being a different guy in slams, bit of a late bloomer, spurred on by the success of countrymen.
Mm.
You know, agricultural.
Yeah.
I won't labour the point, but there you go.
Looks like he can grow a beard in about 2 hours.
Just on the one thing that might be making him that extra bit fangy this tournament, and you might have noticed this over the course of the tournament, if you've been following Karen Hachinov, he's been writing messages of support on the camera lens after he wins, support for the people of Artsakh. Today he didn't explicitly write a message of support for the people of Artsakh. He wrote, "Don't forget your roots," on the camera. Now, what this all refers to, Artsakh is also known as the Nagorno-Karabakh region of Armenia. And Hachinov is a Russian with Armenian roots. He is Armenian by ethnicity. And Armenia is currently in conflict with Azerbaijan over the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh. It's a conflict that escalated into full-scale war in 2020. And the region is currently suffering from a month-long blockade by Azerbaijan. So that's the specific situation he's referring to with those messages of support to the people in that region. To hold on was what he wrote in the previous round. And there is some speculation that the reason he didn't or wasn't quite as explicit today is because the Azerbaijan Tennis Federation has written a letter of complaint to the ITF about these messages. And it's quite a letter. They have written, writing heartfelt wishes, and they made this public. They said, writing heartfelt wishes on the camera lens is a kind of tradition in tennis, but Hachinov abused this, using it in his dirty plans. They describe the messages as provocation and they demand that the ITF punish Hachinov and take drastic measures so that similar situations do not recur. Hachinov said after his win today that he hadn't been censored or asked to not write such messages on the camera. It's possible that he was, though, aware of the complaint and sort of censored himself a little bit so as not to attract so much controversy and attention. But that's a little something that is that's going on behind the scenes. And who knows, maybe it's giving him that extra bit of edge. That being said, it's a bad head-to-head with Tsitsipas, isn't it, for Hachinov?
Yes, I can't remember the exact details of it, but it's 5-0 to Tsitsipas in his favour. And I think some quite recent meetings in there as well.
That's very... I would have expected Tsitsipas to have the edge, but that is... very one-sided.
Yeah, I kind of I'm not sure whether I think of Karen Khachanov in his former state rather than his US Open and Australian Open semi-final state in my assessment of that head-to-head. But I imagine those results are pre. And I can imagine his shape of shot, Tsitsipas, just dragging Khachanov off the court in a way that exposes the stiffness that we've talked about. But this is a new bloke, or at least he's in the best phase of his entire career. And if he's ever going to hurt Tsitsipas, it's now. But I also think Tsitsipas is looking very, very good too. So I'd still make him the favourite.
Tomorrow's schedule starts at 11 a.m. on the Rod Laver Arena for Karolina Pliskova against Magda Linette.
Is it really? 11 a.m.?
11 a.m.
Crikey.
And then not before 1 p.m. for Aryna Sabalenka against Donna Vekic. Now, I know the reason that is given for those two women's quarterfinals being the first two matches in the day session is that they have to come back and play tomorrow. And it wouldn't be fair on one or both of them to have to play in the evening and come back and play again the next day. But you have designed the schedule so that they have to come and play the next day. That is...
And they're playing night session now the following day.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah. Anyway, that is followed by Ben Shelton against Tommy Paul, the All-American.
You mean Blake?
Quarterfinal. Did I say it wrong again?
No.
David's trolling you, Catherine.
Sorry.
Blake Shelton is living rent-free in my head, and I don't even really know who he is. Then at 7:30, it's Andrei Rublev against Novak Djokovic. And then some sensations, Olivia Gadecki and Mark Polmans against Luisa Stefani and R. Matos. I'm just checking his first name. Bear with me. Raphael.
She's a heck of a player, she is.
It's a man.
Stefani, I mean.
Oh, it's mixed doubles.
Stefani.
Well, it might be the end of the road, David, because they're coming up against some sensations.
Yeah. Do we need to explain that reference? Or are we just going to sit there Luisa Stefani, hell of a player she is.
Tell us the reference.
It was...
Lexington.
It was Lexington 2020.
We've been starved of tennis for months.
No tennis for 6 months.
And David was watching anything that was on and was watching Luisa Stefani. And there's a message which we frequently go back to in our WhatsApp
just
group.
Apropos of literally nothing. Out of the blue.
David goes,
no one's chatting.
Luisa Stefani, what a player she is.
Stand by it. I mean, look at her record. Look at her record. Isn't she like a bronze medalist or something in the Olympics?
She then teamed up, didn't she, in the Olympics.
See?
And did sort of really come to everyone's attention, but David had already spotted her.
Didn't she and the Brazilian team beat a team from about six match points down?
They did something extraordinary, didn't they?
What a player.
What a player she is.
Well, it's what a player plus Rafael Matos against some sensations. What a draw. What a draw card that is tomorrow night on the Rod Laver Arena. There is plenty else going on besides. We'll try and update you tomorrow on some doubles and some wheelchair action and some other bits and bobs. Needless to say, we're at the stage of the doubles where there's still sensations everywhere. Storm Hunter, still going with Elise Mertens. They're the fourth seeds in the women's doubles. The top seed in the men's, Wesley Kuhlhoff, Neil Skubsky, they're up against some sensations tomorrow. Rinky Hijikata and Jason Kubler, that's second on the Rod Laver Arena. John Peers, dubious as to whether he's a sensation, I think. But he is with Andres Mies.
How do you define one?
You know when it's not it.
I mean, I think that's really harsh, given the people that are getting the tag.
And but that's part of the point, though, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not about success.
It's got absolutely nothing to do with success. In fact, it's inversely proportional to success.
The original sensation was Christopher O'Connell, David.
So is Piers too good for being a sensation?
I think he might be.
He might be.
I get you.
Yeah, right. Just like Alex de Minaur's never been a sensation.
Right.
And they don't seem to like female sensations. But no. I've anointed some sensations. I think Olivia Gadecki is a sensation.
It was a Czech sensation.
Storm
today.
Hunter. They called Holger Rune a sensation yesterday on Channel 9, and it threw me off.
Mm. And Yuri Lehechka today, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
they're grasping now. It's desperate times. That's it. That's your lot, I think, for today. What is it? Day 9 of the Australian Open. We've got 5 more of these to go. We have our mascot, Cordelia. Lovely cat, she is. Head to our Instagram to see our post with a picture of Cordelia. We're now at the stage where you can laugh at the pre-tournament predictions that we made from the quarterfinals onwards. There is lots to laugh about there, folks, let me tell you. We, of course, have our sponsors for the duration of the Australian Open, the people that are sending us to Indian Wells. It is Steve Fergal's International Tennis Tours and On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. We have our mascots. David has Maisie.
All right, Maisie.
I have Xenia. Matt's got Darwin. I'd also like to just give a quick shout out to Reggie, who is saving mine and Xenia's dignity in the newsletter predictions. Because Reggie is on, bless him, 0. And honestly, I'm so grateful for the fig leaf of respectability that Reggie is providing me right now. Were it not for you, Reggie, I'd be bang last, panicking and going for Hail Marys. So
still time, Reggie.
Do you know what I think Reggie is? A sensation.
Yes, Reggie.
Reggie is a prediction sensation.
Reggie, you're my sensation. Myself and Xenia, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks. I can't do first names anymore. Oh, God.
Where is that going to end up?
We have Drew, Jamie and Hannah. They're our executive producers. And thank goodness Matt's doing the shout-outs.
We've got Jacob Carabel in Washington, D.C.
Right, Jacob.
Hello, Jacob. You've been to Washington, D.C., Matt, haven't you?
I have, yes. I was there. This is an insight into how my mind works. I was there when Andy Murray won Antwerp in 2019. That's one of the things I said, yeah, about being in Washington.
Tennis,
loved it there.
Tennis Jacobs. There have to be some.
I did have a think in the last 20 seconds.
There
and
must
I've,
be
I've
some.
Come up empty.
Can't any Jakes?
Jake Garner, the umpire. Does that count?
That is huge from you, David.
Big. David told us earlier.
It's not the right name,
David,
though.
David told us earlier that in the year 2013, he went for 4 dinners with the umpire, John Blom.
Correct.
Not just the 2 of them.
Well, you know.
Thank you, Jacob.
And I should say, Jacob's written a very nice note to say that his wife, Annie, and he noted on their holiday card last year that their dog, Schroeder, was a 2022 pet mascot.
I remember Schroeder.
For the podcast.
Oh.
Which I thought was lovely.
Love that. Thank you, Jacob and Annie and Schroeder.
We've also got Andy Thorpe, who is in Loughborough. But he's originally from Yorkshire, he says.
I went to university in Loughborough.
Any tennis Andes? Any?
Just a couple.
Just some. Well, actually, he says, I'll be waiting to see if my third shout-out will also involve an Andy Murray tale. So we're obviously predictable.
Give us an Andy Roddick story, David.
An Andy Roddick story. I can't think of any.
No.
Brilliant. Andy, thanks ever so much. We've done you proud there.
Sorry, Andy.
We got John Blom stories earlier, but not Andy Roddick.
I can't think of any.
Bat.
Final shout out today is Hannah Loxton in Somerset.
All right, Hannah.
Hello, Hannah.
Like Hannah from Twitter.
Yes.
Like Hannah Wilkes, yeah. Who, if you're not following on Twitter, you absolutely need to.
Yeah. And Hannah and Andrew are doing great, great work.
Or Handrew.
Yes.
Yeah, they are. Amazing.
Oh, Andy, presumably an Andrew, and Hannah. These two can be a handy.
One thing I do remember about Andy Roddick, you know how he used to win Queens every single year? And then one year he lost in the first round. And he came in a press conference and he said, "What you do in England when you lose in the first round when you've got to fill in 2 weeks until Wimbledon?" And we all just sort of sat there not knowing what to say, a bit like when you asked me for an Andy Roddick sort of story. and he goes, you know, let me know. So I decided to take him up on that, and I went round to the entire British media and I did a list of 10 things for him to do.
And what were they and did he do them?
Can't remember.
I thought maybe you'd arrange the tour of West Bromwich Albion for him or something.
That would have been a good idea.
That would be on the 10 things to do.
I think it's time we get this show off the road. Probably, folks. Yeah. I appreciate you getting me out of a hole, David.
People have got lives.
Thank you ever so much for listening. Despite how this show has ended, do join us tomorrow for better material. We promise. Or we'll at least try. We promise to try. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Leave us an iTunes review. Subscribe to the newsletter. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Instagram. And join us again tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.